Welcome to The Cop Table, a LiverpoolFCHQ.com podcast with your host, Peter Phillips. For all your Liverpool analysis and opinion, check out the website LiverpoolFCHQ.com.
Outside the Shankly Gates, I heard a cop I calling.
Hello and welcome to tonight's Cop Table podcast, where we are going to be previewing the Crystal Palace versus Liverpool game this coming Monday evening. On tonight's show, we have once again with us Jay Riley. Jay's a regular on the Redmen TV, also Radio City Fan Friday talk show, and writer a little bit for the Liverpool Echo. Also with us tonight, representing Crystal Palace, we have Donna Hurley. Donna is season ticket holder at Palace and has been with us once again previously on the podcast. So welcome to you as well, Donna. Okay then, Jay, looking back towards the game yesterday, opening game at Anfield against West Ham, what was your thoughts on the opening day victory for Liverpool?
Well, first and foremost, it was great, wasn't it, to get the 3 points. And I did say on the last podcast that, you know, it's all about getting the 3 points, and you can't really always expect the performance to be there on the opening game, because, you know, you've just had a hard pre-season, and, you know, you just don't know whether your players are in sync together yet, or the opposition had quite a few new players as well, so you didn't know what you were going to get from West Ham having a new manager as well. But I thought with Liverpool, it was just cruise control, really, wasn't it? I mean, we won 4-0, and I think, you know, that was probably the correct scoreline, really, because Liverpool totally controlled the game. And, you know, I think we had, what, 65% possession as well, and, you know, was it 15 shots or something in the game? And we created quite a lot of really good opportunities as well, especially in the first half. I mean, we could arguably have been 3 or 4 nil up at half time, to tell you the truth. So, you know, to finish the game 4-0, it was probably about right, really, all things considered. And it was some outstanding performances, really, wasn't it? Without really getting out of second gear, as I said, we were in cruise control. And I mean, when I was actually at the game, I thought Keita had an okay performance, but then when I watched it back today on LFC TV, he was absolutely outstanding, to be honest. You know, considering it was his debut, it was a fantastic display from him. You know, fantastic in the middle of the park, just, you know, linking the play with the forward players. Some of his passing was fantastic, really, and, you know, it's a sign of things to come. I said, you know, all pre-season, I'm so excited to see this lad in Liverpool shirt. And like I say, I didn't think when I was at the game, I didn't think he was fantastic, but, you know, when you watch the game back, it was a very memorable debut from him. He was brilliant. Other than that, you know, Sadio Mane finished last season very well. He was probably our best player, you know, the last couple of months of the season. Scored in the European Cup final as well against Real Madrid. He's arguably been our best player in pre-season as well. And he's basically just carried on where he left off, because he scored 2 goals yesterday. And like I say, fantastic performance by him. And also, you know, I thought Gini Wijnaldum played well, and James Milner, who actually got man of the match on Sky, didn't he? So there's quite a lot of good performances there in a red shirt. I also thought Joe Gomez looked very good and composed, very assured, alongside Virgil van Dijk, who we all know, you know, obviously he's a Rolls Royce, isn't he, a centre-half. But the problem we have is who's going to partner van Dijk, and I thought Joe Gomez was outstanding, to be honest with you. Yeah, of course, he wasn't really threatened too much. And I think on one occasion, he lost Arnautovic, but he did get back well to deflect it wide for a corner. So he was sort of like redeemed himself, didn't he, really? But positive signs there with his partnership there with Van Dijk, because with the news that Dejan Lovren's probably going to be out for 3 or 4 weeks, then it's his opportunity now to get a run of games in the start 11 at centre-half, because that's where he was brought to play when he was a kid a few years ago. He's been tried at left-back, he's played at right-back, hasn't he, last season as well, and maybe he'll get his proper run of games now at centre-half. And, you know, he'd done his shelf for playing in that role for, you know, in the future. No problem at all, no harm at all, because, you know, as I said, I thought he looked good alongside Van Dijk. And, you know, we got the typical performance from Andy Robertson, absolutely fantastic at left-back. You know, he gets up and down like a Jordashell bunny, isn't he? Fantastic player as well. So, like I say, you've got to be happy with the opening day. It's all about the 3 points, but there was a little bit of panache about the performance as well, wasn't there, really? And I thought West Ham struggled. You know, when you've got a midfield of Mark Noble and Jack Wilshere, it's not very mobile, is it? And suicides really coming to Anfield with a midfield pairing of that. So, you know, they didn't really offer much, did they? And I said in the preview to the West Ham game, I was a little bit concerned that Liverpool looked a bit open in some of the pre-season games. And, you know, I thought Arnautovic is a good player. He could have caused a few issues, but in truth, you know, it was quite comfortable for Liverpool. It was the back line, wasn't it? And, you know, Alisson didn't really have much to do in the game. I thought, you know, obviously his distribution looked really good. He's good with the ball at his feet, isn't he? And, but he wasn't really threatened, didn't really have much to do in terms of saves to make. And it was just a stroll in the park, really, for Liverpool. And I've, you know, I'm very happy with the 3 points.
Yeah, and like you just said, then there was a lot of very good performances. I don't think there was one player who had a bad performance, if you like. But from everyone that played on Sunday, Jay, who was the actual? I know you said Milner was the man of the match on Sky, but for you, who was the standout player?
When I was at the game, I thought I would have given it to Wijnaldum because I just thought he was brilliant, to be honest, and he's very underrated. I mean, there is times, occasion when people will say he goes missing in games, in particular away from home. But I just think he's a lot better at Anfield in the home games. But I just thought he was brilliant, to be honest. He covered every blade of grass and, you know, I just thought he got down the pitch very well. Obviously, he kept us ticking over, linked the play well. I just thought he was very good. I mean, obviously, Milner was good as well. He got the old man of the match on Sky. But now I have had time to, you know, to sit back and watch it again on LFC TV and reflect on the game. I think there is a good shout to say maybe arguably Keita, man of the match, to be honest with you. Because like I said before, I'm excited to see this lad play. And I thought he was brilliant. When you look back and all the stats and all, I've taken on board all that as well. And he had one hell of a game, really, for his debut. I thought he had a great game. And on that basis of what having the beauty of being able to watch it again on LFC TV, I'd probably say Naby Keita now.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree. I said myself on Twitter after the game that I thought Gini Wijnaldum was man of the match myself, because he just seemed to be covering everywhere. He was getting forward as well. He was breaking up players. Passing was brilliant. But then, like you say, I seen the highlights last night. I've seen little bits and pieces of little clips of Keita on Twitter and things. And his performance was superb. I think he only put one pass astray in the whole of the 90 minutes. So, yeah, and he also went up front, didn't he? He played in Mane's position once he'd been taken off for a rest. So it just shows that he's got a lot of strings to his bow, hasn't he? He can cover a lot of different positions, and I think he's going to be absolutely vital for us going forward this season. Looking forward to the trip down to Crystal Palace, Jay. I'm not too sure about their signings that they've made. I know they've brought a few in, but who do you see from their side of things causing us problems on Monday evening?
Got to be the main man, hasn't it? Wilfried Zaha. I mean, last season, he terrorised young Trent Alexander-Arnold, didn't he? And ironically, Trent learned from that and he moved on from that. And he got better and better as the season developed and was great in the European Cup final and ended up getting called up to the World Cup squad, didn't he? But he got terrorised there at Selhurst Park last season. And it was a really tough game. I mean, I know Liverpool came from behind, didn't he, to win the game. And I think we were very fortunate, really, because Karius could arguably have been sent off in that game early on when he came off his line. Too slow off his line, clattered into Zaha, gave away a penalty, and it could have been a red card, couldn't it? In truth, I think we got a bit fortunate with that one, but like we had to come from behind, didn't we, in that game to get a much-needed 3 points at the time, and it was a very hard-fought game and a hard-fought victory, and I think that a tough side to play against Palace, and, you know, people criticise Roy Hodgson, and quite rightly so, but to be fair to him, he went there when they were in massive trouble, and he's turned them round, and they're like a mid-table team now, really, aren't they? And, you know, Selhurst Park's a tough place to go, and you know, they've got to create a good atmosphere there, don't they, their fans? And, you know, like I say, I think it'll be a tough game because they're full of pace and they're full of power, aren't they, in the team? And you know, Ben Seche had a bit of a nightmare against us last season, Mr. Sitter, didn't he? But he does tend to cause Liverpool problems. The only thing I will say, though, you know, obviously Virgil van Dijk might have him in his pocket a little bit, like, but he is a threat from set pieces, isn't he, Ben Seche? He's a big, solid target man, so you know he has caused us problems in the past, so it's one of them, isn't it? You know, you're looking at Zaha as the main man because he's lightning, isn't he? And he's so direct and he's difficult to play against. He's full of tricks, and you know, he's started adding goals to his game as well. I think he's a very good player, very dangerous player. And you know, I think in the middle of the park, I'm not even going to try and pronounce his name, but they've got like a Serbian, haven't he? I think he might be the captain now, actually. He takes the penalties. He's a very good player as well, in my opinion.
Milijevic, is he?
Milijevic or whatever, something like that. It's easy for you to say, but
penalties, you know,
he's a good player. He's a very good footballer, like, so they've got someone there in the middle of the park as well who can put his foot on the ball. Depends on, with the new signings that they've made, I'm not too sure whether they'll be starting the game. They've got Max Meyer, haven't they? So that's whether or not he starts, I don't know, to be honest, but I think that they're a big, powerful, quick, pacey side, Palace, and they could cause us some problems, so I'm expecting a tough encounter on Monday night.
Yeah, and the Liverpool side that's going down there, do you expect Klopp to make many changes? Obviously, we've just come back off a 4-0 victory, and no one's, like we said, had any sort of problems in the game, no poor performances, no, doesn't seem like we've got any injury problems, so is it same 11 again for you, Jay?
Well, there's an 8-day gap, isn't he? So I don't see any major reason why it should change. I mean, I know Jordan Henderson's chomping at the bit, isn't he, to start, and he's the club captain and what have you. But I just think there's no real reason to change a winning team, and it was a comfortable winning team, wasn't it, as well? You know, we were in cruise control, as I said before, but the only thing I will say is it's a different proposition coming up against the Crystal Palace side on their own patch. They're a lot different to West Ham, really, aren't they? Because, as I've just said there, they're full of pace, they're full of power, they're a strong, strong side, really, whereas West Ham are not. You know, they've got no legs in the middle of the park. You know, Palace are different to that. They're a lot pacing, they let you on the counter-attack. Liverpool probably have a lot more of the ball, as they do against most teams. But, you know, they've got players who can hit you on the counter-attack, Palace, and also from set pieces as well, whereas West Ham didn't really have that, did they, against them? So, like I say, I think it's going to be a total different game, but you know, why would you change a winning team? That's just 1-4-0 comfortably when we've got an 8-day gap. There is no real reason to change it. I mean, obviously Sturridge come on and scored straight away after 24 seconds, and you've got Shaqiri wants to get a start because he's very eager, isn't he? I thought he done well when he came on, wants to impress, doesn't he? He's a very good player as well. You know, Jordan Henderson, as I've just said there, he's the captain at the end of the day, but he still hasn't had much of a pre-season, has he? So, you know, on that basis, I just don't think there's any reason to change the team. And I know Fabinho's there as well, isn't he? Played a lot of the pre-season games, then had a little bit of a muscle injury, got checked out. He was totally fine. He's a bit of an illness, but he was available, wasn't he, for the game yesterday? And like I say, he'd probably be disappointed that if he doesn't get a start, but you can't really change a winning team, can you? And there's just no point because there's like over a week gap, isn't he? So they should be fine. I mean, the thing with Klopp, though, he likes to see how they do in training, doesn't he? And if someone's not quite on it in training, he'll replace them and he'll bring someone else in. And that's the beauty of having a bigger squad now, which we have got. So, you know, we can't complain too much about the squad. I think we're fine, really. Maybe one or two little tweaks here and there. Maybe another centre-half wouldn't have gone amiss. But, like I say, I just can't see him change a winning team when there's a week's grace as well before we play again, 8 days' grace. So I think it'll probably be the same team, and let's hope it's good enough to beat Palace and continue a good start to the season.
Yeah, like you say, we have got a pretty big squad at the moment now, and there's been a few links today of players that could be possibly on the way out. There was one link of Clavan could possibly be moved on as well this season. Do you see much business going that way towards the end of it? Obviously, players can go abroad, teams from abroad can sign players from our country. So, do you see much happening between now and when their window shuts, Jay?
Yeah, I think you probably see two or three on the way out. I mean, you'd probably say Mignolet will go because it does seem Karius is the number two, and you know, just spent 67 million on a goalie who's the number one. So, there's no real need to have Mignolet around. Is he's sure at the age he is now? Is he 30 years of age? He's going to want to have game time, so he needs to be playing football at his age. And I think the worry with Mignolet is because he's on fairly decent sized wages and he's got 3 years left on his contract, we're stuck really. We might be forced into a situation where we have to loan him out, which is not exactly ideal, but you know, it is what it is. And it's like Markovic is in his last year of his contract, I think, so it's a tough one with him because paid £20 million for him, but I think we'd probably begrudge like letting him go out on loan in his last year. It's a similar situation with Sturridge. What was the point in letting him go out if no one's going to buy him? Keep him for his last year and he might prove a point, you know, have a point to prove, and that's exactly what he's doing. He looked good, he looked sharp in pre-season, and obviously he scored, didn't he, yesterday when he was on the pitch 24 seconds. It was madness, really. But, you know, with Markovic, we need to really be getting money for him. We need to sell him. It's the same with Origi as well. He's in that last year of his contract dilemma, so there's no point in loaning these players out because what's the point? It's like effectively terminating the contract at 12 months early, isn't it? And you know, when you look at like the only good thing about what it is, you're basically getting some of the wages off the wage bill. That's the only difference, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? So there's like other clubs will either pay all of the wages or 75% of the wages or something. So I just don't see the point. You know, we need to be selling these players who are in their last year of the contract, because you know, there's no point in letting them go out on loan. It just defeats the object, really. But I'm sure they're the type of players that we're probably looking at selling. And the Clavin stuff today, it's come as a little bit of a shock, really. But I suppose, like, he's probably not going to get much game time, is he? Because providing the players stay fit, he'd be like fourth or fifth choice, wouldn't he? But as you know, as well as I do, and the rest of the fan base knows, Liverpool at the back, other than Van Dijk, the rest of them all seem to get injured. Like, you know, Joe Matip's made of prawn crackers, isn't he? Joe Gomez has had a lot of injuries as well, to be honest. And if you're looking at selling Clavin, then, you know, at the minute, Lovren's injured out for 3 weeks. So if you're looking at selling Clavin, then you're looking at maybe that Nathaniel Phillips being like the fourth choice, which some people seem to think he looks all right. And, you know, at the end of the day, if Klopp thinks he's got something about him, then that's good enough for me, you, or anyone else. But I'm a little bit unsure about him, to be honest, because that game against Torino, you know, he's a centre-half, and he was partly to blame for the goal we conceded. I mean, don't get me wrong, it wasn't solely his fault, because Moreno was poor for that goal as well, and Klopp was having a go at Keita for not tracking back and helping Moreno out. But ultimately, it was Phillips' man in the box, and he let him go, and he scored from it. And not just that, he also got turned just on the halfway line by Belotti and brought him down. Now, in a proper game of football, that could have been a red card, you know what I mean? So, two massive errors, really, for the centre-half to make. And look, he's only a kid, he's a young boy, but I don't want him to be in that position where he's pressured, where if we Liverpool have got a couple of injuries at centre-half, and all of a sudden we have to use this kid at centre-back, it's not ideal, is it? You know what I mean? So, like I say, it's one of them. I personally, at the age that he is in his last year of his contract, I'd keep Clavin, to be perfectly honest. I think when he was called upon last season, I think he played about 10, 15 games on the spin. And he actually done all right for us. And then he scored that goal, didn't he, on New Year's Day at Turf Moor to get the late winner against Burnley. I hardly seen him again after that. It was a strange situation. But personally, I'd keep him. I just don't see the point in letting him go. You know what I mean? He provides good experience and cover for us. But again, a bit like Mignolet with the age factor, he might want to go out elsewhere and get game time, because, you know, he's in his 30s now, isn't he? So for him, he probably wants to be playing football really on a regular basis. So that might be a little bit of thought process in it, a bit like Ings when he said, look, I need games, and he's got his move to Southampton. Maybe Clavin's had a discussion with Klopp and said, look, I want to play football, and they're not going to stand in his way, and they're going to let him move on. But I think it remains to be seen. Like, there's a few weeks left of that window, isn't he? So yeah, I think there'll be a two or three of our players moving on by then.
Yeah, it's interesting the way that that Phillips has now forced himself into the first team squad, if you like, because the Irish lad Conor Masterson seemed to be on the bench a few times last season towards the end, didn't he, when we had injuries once again, but doesn't seem to have been mentioned much this time around, has he?
Just strange when he seems to have like gone off the radar a little bit, hasn't he? And this Phillips is sort of like taking over from him. But you know, it's one of them. Not any backup players, aren't they? And it's just, the problem is you'd like to hope and you'd like to think we would not need to call upon these young boys to play. But you know, as we know too well, that we've got injury prone defenders, and they're all injury prone apart from Van Dijk, aren't they? As I touched on before, Joe Gomez is even injury prone, and you've got Lovren and Matip, so they're not really reliable, are they? Not 100% reliable anyway. So there is times when you're thinking in the back of your mind, we might have to call upon one of these two, you know, like young kids as the season progresses. And it's not ideal, is it? But, you know, as I say, fingers crossed, touch wood, it doesn't come down to that, because, you know, I'm not 100% convinced. But, you know, let's see. Let's hope and pray that our players just stay fit and we don't have the issues that, you know, we've had in the past. But, you know, it is a bit of a dilemma for Klopp, but you're right, he has sort of like gone off the radar a bit, that Masterson.
Thanks, Jay. Okay, what we're going to do now, Jay, is just get your thoughts and your predictions on the game down at Selhurst Park on Monday night. What's your score predictions and your reasons for them, please, Jay?
You know what, right? I think it's the start of the season. So, again, it's not easy to just expect to go somewhere and get 3 points. It's a tough place to go. And Monday night, the atmosphere, I'm sure they'll be bouncing, their fans, their first home game of the season. And as I said before, they're a big, powerful side, you know, with full of pace as well. You know, the fullbacks are quick. Van Aanholt's quick. Schlupp's quick. You know, said about Zaha before. He's grease lightning, isn't he? And he's full of tricks and he's added goals to his game now. And Andros Townsend's quick and they've got players in the middle of the park and put a foot on the ball. So they've got that Bissaka as well, haven't he? Wan Bissaka, who he's a proper find him, isn't he? Like a little kid, isn't he? And he's quick as well and he's just adapted to the Premier League. Got his game, got his chance last season and he's just gone from strength to strength. So they've got plenty of dangerous players in their team, to be honest with you. And I think it's a really, really tricky game. But I'm just hoping that this Liverpool team, we've just got that little aura about us, haven't we, where, you know, it doesn't matter who we play or where we go, whether it's at Anfield or whether it's an away game against the top team or the lesser team or into Europe. You're always confident, aren't you, that Liverpool can go and get 3 points or win the game of football, because there's no fear. You know, like other teams should fear us, because, you know, apart from Man City, with Liverpool, you know, the top two teams in this league, aren't we? Do you know what I mean? Other teams should fear us, but I do think it'll be a tough game. No, there's no two ways about it. I do rate Palace. I think they're a strong side, and I just think maybe it will be tough, but I'm just hoping we can do what we've done there last season, and it'll be a hard-fought game, but I just hope that it's another hard-fought victory and we win 2-1.
Going for a 2-1 victory, Jay, yeah. Sound?
Hi, Jack the producer here. I hope you're enjoying this week's show. If you'd like some more football podcasts by Runny Dog Media, then you might be interested in Total Football Analysis. Hosted by Chris Darwin and Lee Scott, Total Football Analysis exists to provide you with a little more context and understanding of the game that dominates all of our lives. You can find it at iTunes, SoundCloud, Acast and TotalFootballAnalysis.com.
Okay, then we're going to head over to Donna now, representing Crystal Palace. Okay, Donna, what was your thoughts on the opening day victory against Fulham? 2-0 win for you guys. A little bit of insight into that performance, please, Donna.
Refreshing performance. No real areas for concern, which is always good. I think in terms of performances, I mean, I suppose everyone's raving about Aaron Wan-Bissaka. He was all of the talk before the game was about Sessegnon, who's, you know, young, you know, fantastically talented player for Fulham, expected to, you know, make a mark in the Premier League this year, and up against an inexperienced right back in Aaron Wan-Bissaka. You know, I think it's his, if I'm correct, is it his 8th Premier League game, maybe his 9th, might be, I'm sure, in the stats, but he was just brilliant. You know, his ability to block balls, his positioning, you know, improving. And if you've seen the highlights, just the way in which he made the second goal for Wilfried Zaha, taking a hit from Mitrovic, getting back up, cutting inside and leaving Sessegnon on for dead, and playing a lovely ball through to Zaha, which killed off the game. So, you know, Wan-Bissaka's performance has been great. But you know, I think as well, you know, a word for Wayne Hennessy, who probably over the years is probably subject to the most level of, I'm going to say measured criticism, sometimes frenzied criticism from Palace fans. I'm probably somewhere in between measured and frenzied when I think about criticising him. But, you know, he made a couple of, you know, really, really good saves, you know, really, really crucial saves. And especially as he's got, you know, a new goalkeeper signed from Getafe, you know, breathing down his back, you know, he needed that performance and, you know, kept in the game at times. So, you know, Hennessy was quite pleasing. You know, Van Aanholt again, you know, assured and forward, and Jeffrey Schlupp, another guy, you know, got the first goal. He's playing in a more advanced role this year. He's been in and out with injuries, so, you know, it's you know, I wouldn't say it was a performance to, you know, get too excited by, but it just kind of, I think it was a good calming measure for a lot of Palace fans. I don't think there was too much you know, as I said, pessimism entering the start of the season, given the, you know, the couple of players that Palace got in and the you know, unmitigating trust that we have in Hodgson. But yeah, you know, Wan-Bissaka has been a revelation. And if he can, you know, maintain that form and hopefully, the likes of myself and other Palace fans, you know, don't heap too much expectation on him and you know, allow him to make mistakes and to continue to learn, he looks a really, really exciting prospect. And I think a lot of Palace players, or not Palace players, but even Palace fans, sort of reflecting on his impact at right back, you know, there have been similar comparisons made to the Trent Alexander-Arnold had. I read somewhere about Alexander-Arnold, you know, potentially being a more suited to a midfield role. Wan-Bissaka is one who's come the other way, traditionally a winger and nesting in a you know, looking as comfortable as anybody in a right back position in his eighth ever Premier League game. So it's really, really encouraging, and you know, hopefully a sign of things to come.
I'm just actually looking on the Eagles Beak website at some of the stats from the game, and then and the player performances. Seems that Patrick Van Aanholt and like you say, Wan-Bissaka had good games, and then also Zaha, Townsend, and another couple of players who've got good performance rating. So is this the type of tactics Roy Hodgson's using now? Is he getting the wingers up and down? Is he stretching the play? Is he all about getting the ball into the box then through Benteke, and not so much playing through the middle as he's done previously with his other teams?
I think it's bits and pieces, to be fair. You're right in terms of Townsend's impact, and it's very much I suppose you know, a unit. You've got in Wilf Zaha, as far as I'm concerned, you know, the best Palace player that I've ever seen, and I think we might ever see for a long time. He was obviously the talisman, you know, the guy that people look to make things happen. But you know, Hennessy, not Hennessy, I beg your pardon, but Townsend, you know, in particular the last sort of 12 months since you know, maybe even further. I think, you know, Sam Allardyce sort of picked Townsend's form up. He looked disjointed. He looked dejected at Palace when Pardew was still there, and there was talk of him leaving, and he's become such a hugely, hugely important part to what makes Palace ticks. He runs, as you said, he gets up and down the channel, and he's hugely important as well in terms of, you know, Wan-Bissaka's development, you know, being a, you know, being an ally and being someone there who's going to praise him when he's doing well. He's going to, you know, lay off some of that advice. In terms of side of play, you know, it is a bit mixed. I think, you know, Palace is still under Hodgson, probably the only, as far as I, you know, can see, there's probably a few exceptions, still playing a sort of a form of 4-4-2 or 4-4-1-1. So, you know, where Townsend is used effectively on the wide, you know, Wilf Zaha is essentially a striker now and playing off Benteke. And I think, to Benteke's, you know, credit, even though his goal scoring record last year was abysmal, you know, his confidence began to sort of grow, and his hold up play and his sort of his big man up front play is quite useful. You know, Zaha nearly scored a goal at the weekend on the back of a Benteke flick down from a long ball in. So there is a good bit of variation. I think there was probably a time where, possibly after the England job, when there was a bit of ridicule bandied about Hodgson becoming the past manager and you know, reverting to a sort of a rigid 4-4-2 rather than maybe a 4-3-3, which, you know, many Palace fans would have felt would have brought the best out of Zaha, you know, in a wider role, and Townsend in a wider role playing off you know, Benteke. But it's worked, you know, and I think it's sort of evidenced in, you know, in the form and the results. I think hopefully we'll continue the trend from last season, where, you know, outside of, I think, you know, the top six, top seven and so on, once Hodgson came in, you know, they just weren't losing games to sides that were around them or you know, or below them. And it's testament to the way in which, you know, we can utilize the pace on the break. You've got players like Milivojevic, who sits and he's essentially just a brick wall, you know, sitting in front of the back four, and at the back, you know, Sacco and Tompkins, who when they've partnered and played with each other, just refuse to be beaten. So there's a good spine of the team, which I think had been, you know, lacking for a while, which then allows, you know, a bit of variety. You know, Townsend's, you know, to play effectively, but having, you know, we saw Saka breaking forward, and, you know, and Van Aanholt, who loves to get forward, you know, the back end of last season, he was, you know, pivotal in terms of, you know, getting on the score sheet, you know, getting involved, and you know, he played the ball through for Jeffrey Schluff's goal at the weekend as well. You know, there's good, you know, bobbing forward from those fullbacks, because you've got, you know, people, as I said, like Milivojevic, who's happy just to sit and help mop up, so that if there is a, you know, a threat in the break, we've got pace to come back. So it's yeah, you know, the football's good, you know, the results are good. So it's you know, dare I say it, looking, you know, fairly positive.
Yeah, I'd just like to ask you about the new signings that the Palace have made. Obviously Kouyaté played at the weekend, didn't he? Max Meyer, he didn't play. Is there some sort of fitness issues with him? Is that why he's not been in the squad at the weekend?
Yeah, basically, I think I read that he hasn't played a game since April, and obviously, you know, having ran down his contract at Schalke, he hasn't had a pre-season at all. So I think, you know, Palace are trying to, you know, get a game arranged, you know, especially for him during the week, to try to get his fitness levels up. You know, he's a young guy, so I think Hodgson's quite confident of, you know, getting him match fit. But I'd imagine it's going to be a couple of weeks before that, and it might even be until after the international break before, you know, maybe we see him starting. So the signings have been, you know, there was initial panic, there was initial worry in terms of, you know, Lazio and Kabay, a hugely important player for Palace, you know, just, you know, one of the few players Palace have in the side that, you know, could, you know, get the ball, you know, deep and just turn and have a bit of composure to be able to, you know, feed the ball further up the pitch and, you know, and get play going. So, you know, he was a massive loss, and they've lost a lot of depth. Bakary Sakho and Lee Chung-Yung didn't necessarily pull up trees at Palace, but, you know, they're just numbers in a squad that was already depleted and heavily depleted with injury last year. So I think, you know, business was slow. Aguita, the keeper, was signed on a pre-contract back in January, and then there was, you know, a series of tumbleweeds just floating around Sellers Park for a few weeks while, you know, West Ham were spending all their money and their grandmother's mortgage on any player they could find. And, you know, Fulham have come up and spent 100 million. Wolves have pretty much, you know, bought entire districts of Portugal to come and play for them, it seems. There's, you know, just endless of money being spent by clubs. And Palace had been, you know, quite shrewd, you know, I suppose. There was talk of, you know, a move for Loftus-Cheek, which I don't necessarily think was truly on. There was whispers of it. I think Chelsea declined it, but to get Max Meyer in when Palace did, you know, about a week, maybe a week and a half before the end of the transfer window, it just any of those anxieties that have been there previously, because Palace don't know how to do good transfer windows. It's always panicked, it's always rushed, it's always, you know, you see clubs signing other players and you think, oh, Jesus, we should be signing someone like that. So to get someone of his calibre in, when you know, hear how much quality he had captaining, I think, Germany to, was it the Olympics in 2016, and, you know, a year ago being linked with some of the top teams. So, you know, credit to, you know, Dougie Friedman, Parrish, and Ian Moody, the club, for getting that over the line. And I think, you know, Kouyaté, I think, is probably someone who will push for a starting place. You know, definitely, I think he's got experience and he's proven to, you know, he had a couple of good seasons at West Ham as well. So, you know, there's good quality coming in. Jordan Ayew and is very much, you know, a fringe player. I think someone to, you know, to add a bit of depth and someone who can play wide or play up front if needs to. So adding that, you know, small snippets of quality in has just alleviated, you know, some of that, you know, anxiety. And I think if you looked, you know, in January and looked at the state Palace were in, you know, I think one of the, you know, two key areas that Palace had identified as needing was, you know, number one, you know, getting a right back, because Joel Ward had been, you know, a bit shaky, but the emergence of Wan-Bissaka has probably saved Palace 20 or 25 million pounds this year, which is, you know, quite key when you look at, you know, how, I suppose, frugal and shrewd Palace have had to be. So it's allowed them, you know, I suppose, to go out and get a Meyer. You know, they've, I suppose, with Kabay off the wage bill, as, you know, as big a loss to the playing squad as he is, you know, I'd imagine there's sort of 80, you know, 90,000 pounds a week going to, you know, to Max Meyer that was going to Kabay. So, you know, if Palace can stay injury free, because, you know, it was kind of catastrophic last year, one stage no fit strikers at the club, you know, I think should do okay and should be okay. But, you know, being able to keep Wilfried Zaha, I know everyone's probably sick of Palace fans going on about him, but there's just nothing you can't do. You know, he scored again, you know, at the weekend, could have scored, you know, another was unlucky not to. He's just, you know, being able to hold on to him. And I think Palace will hold on to him for the full season. I don't think he's going to go in January. I think he'll, you know, probably go next year. I don't like to say that, but I think if Palace can get one good season out of him, you know, have a good push, you know, holding on to Zaha, who's irreplaceable, is, you know, as good, you know, a move in a transfer window as, you know, any signing that any team has made. And I'll probably get ridiculed for saying that, but he's just irreplaceable. I'm not comparing him to Mo Salah before you should take this out of context, but, you know, he's to Palace what Salah is to Liverpool. You know, he's just, you look to him to make things happen. I know Liverpool aren't short of people who can make things happen, but it's just that magnitude and that quality that, you know, it's irreplaceable. And it's been pointed out as well about, you know, he was linked with a £70 million move to Spurs and Chelsea over, you know, over the summer. But he's, you know, he's priceless to Palace. You know, you could give Palace £150 million and, you know, I don't think we could replace him. You know, so we could field 17 players instead of 11 and try to get six extra players in to just have the kind of impact that, you know, a single Wilf Zaha does. So it's been good. It's strange, you know. I kind of feel like, you know, that I should be, I don't know, sort of going to my doctor for some sort of an examination, because it's so rare for Palace to be, you know, positive and, you know, I think quietly optimistic. We've had our sort of fingers burnt You know, in recent years of thinking, you know, this is our year, and particularly after the cup final, you thought, okay, you know, there's a good squad here to push on, and then Pardew, you know, decided to, bring Palace into the ground, and you had Big Sam who came in who helped, and then the ill-fated Frank de Boer, four league games in charge. So it feels like there's a bit of stability. Hodgson has, you know, signed an extension to his deal to keep him here for, you know, at least another two seasons. So it's not looking too shabby at all.
Yeah, just looking at the at a few of the Crystal Palace pages earlier on, saying that Zaha's going to be offered a new contract, whether he signs that or not, is something that we'll find out in the future. But yeah, he's very important to Crystal Palace, isn't he? But as a looking for the season as a whole, Donna, what would you describe as a successful season for Crystal Palace?
I suppose first thing, I'd like kind of sort of 38 games interrupted, where there's, you know, just a level of consistency, across the board, where there's no, you know, chaos, in January. There's no, unsuspected departures, managerial chaos, because, you know, Palace have sort of, gone through managers as much, if not more, than most clubs in recent years. It's hard to believe it's not that long ago where, Neil Warnock was in charge of Palace again for an ill-fated couple of months before Alan Pardew. You know, that's the extent with which it's just been, no consistency and stability there, and it's hard, to build on that. Pardew did well, to his credit, to get to a cup final, and then it all fizzled out. So I mean, everyone talks about Burnley last year, and I think everyone who finished below Burnley, the aspiration is to, is to be the Burnley. I think there's, a bit more competition in the fact that, Everton have improved. I say West Ham have improved and strengthened, but will probably take a bit of time, to click and to gel. But there are a couple of teams who are going to fancy, doing better than they did last year. I'd be happy to better last season's position. Ideally, I think, a successful season for Palace would be top half, but the eternal sort of pessimist in me will say, securing a relatively, comfortable survival. And I don't mean survival to scale up by the skin of the teeth, but, you'd like to be, come into February and know, I think we've done enough, and let's see where, Palace can push on. So, anything better than 11th, I would be, pleased with. You'd like to push into the top half, but I want to get, two ahead of ourselves, because I think you look at, some of the big teams, and I think the gap is getting bigger, and it's part of me a bit, fearful, and probably will get a bit of a reality check on Monday night, against Liverpool. But there's a bit of optimism. I'd like a bit of a cup run this year. I think I probably, thankfully, now looking back, missed the cup final 3 years ago, because I had to Ireland for a family do. I'm probably glad I missed it, because I wouldn't be able to cope with losing in the manner we did to those people we won't speak the name of this vaulted podcast. But it would be nice to get a bit of a cup run going, because I suppose when you look at teams outside of the top six. It's great to finish seventh. If you're Burnley in Europe, it's great to finish eighth. But where's the sort of unbridled joy in that? So I don't care if it's the League Cup or if it's the FA Cup again. But maybe another day out in Wembley, and maybe a more successful one, would be nice. But that's everyone's everyone's dream. So we'll say top half and a clean sweep of all the cups, and I'll be moderately pleased.
Excellent stuff. Cheers, Donna. And just one more before we wrap up with the band that we're going to play this week. Give us your score prediction and a theory behind your predictions, please, Donna.
So part of me is saying that, you look at Liverpool yesterday, tearing West Ham apart. Selhurst isn't probably the easiest place for Liverpool to go. We've got a couple of victories there in recent years. Mo Salah robbed us of a point back in March, which was actually Palace's last defeat in the league, at the end of March, with that, poxy toe poke, which was undeserving of such a grand stage like Sellers Park. There was no class in, there's no class in a toe poke from Mo Salah. Being honest, I actually think, Palace are well organised. If we're set up well and are, a bit disciplined and, can just, I suppose, contain the, that sort of frightening trio that you know that Liverpool have, then you know I'll be you know optimistic that we might be able to you know snatch a 1-1. But you know my heart tells me, you know, 1-1. You know, maybe my head tells me that Liverpool might just be a bit too strong. You know, some of your reinforcements over the summer seem to, with Naby Keita in particular, seems like a player who could just bring you to that next level in terms of, you know, composure in midfield. So, you know, I'd be happy with a point. And then, which should, you know, set off a run for Palace to be top by November, you know. So, yeah, I'll say 1-1. We'll take the draw.
Gonna go for a 1-1 score draw, yeah. Just my own thoughts on the game, because I didn't say them when it was recorded with Jay earlier. I think it's going to be a tough game once again down at Palace. Obviously, the fans are very close to the pitch, aren't they? They create a really good atmosphere, especially on a Monday night. Everyone's going to be well up for it, and it'll be a really tough game for Liverpool to go down there. But I just think that, like you said, with the strength that they've got in the attacking positions, with the likes of Salah and Mane providing ammunition for Firmino as well, I think Liverpool will just have that little bit of an edge, and I'll go for a 2-1 Liverpool win, sorry.
Oh,
nearly slipped.
Oh, yeah. I think the truth's coming out. I think you know yourself that, you know, it's in the stars, you know. I the last time, it wasn't a Monday night, actually, was it? I think it was a Wednesday night, but, you know, the last time Liverpool came to Selhurst under lights, obviously, famously, you know, Dwight Gayle put you to the sword. But yeah, it should be good. I think, you know, there's a bit of positivity, and there have been some, I wouldn't say issues, but there's a bit of drama, you know, going on in terms of the sort of the home sale fanatics and the ultras who sort of populate that bottom corner of the home sale stand. There was a tug of war, a misunderstanding, however you put it, between them and the club in terms of trying to get a more centralised singing section. So I think one thing that you will notice will be, you know, the lack of the HF and the potentially the drum. I'm not too sure, they might have relocated, but you know that pocket has been sort of split up across the ground, partly in protest, partly because of, you know, apparently a sort of lack of cooperation from the club, or more that there was a lack of communication from the club to people whose seats that they were, you know, potentially trying to vacate from to put the HF in. So it'll be interesting to see what the atmosphere is like. It will be raucous enough. You know, a game under lights, first game of the season, on the back of good form and positivity. I think that, you know, there will be a cracking atmosphere down there, and there'll be plenty who will be, you know, keen to make sure there is, because of, you know, what's happened. But it'll be interesting to see, you know, how that develops halfway through the game, if it can maintain, if we can sort of reach the heights that we're used to hearing in Selhurst. So yeah, you know, here's hoping that you know, there'll be a good Selhurst crowd backing Palace, and you know, they'll just put the, you know, the beaten European finalists to the sword 2 or 3-0. But we'll see. Hopefully Karius will be in goals. I have I obviously know he won't be, but I've got fond memories of him steaming out last year, giving away the penalty. I think everyone's got fond memories of Karius, unfortunately. But yeah, you know, it'll be a tough game. I think particularly, I mean, you know, when I look at Liverpool and think, you know, of the performance against West Ham, I think it's, yeah, partly because West Ham were probably a bit overhyped and haven't quite clicked yet and should get better. But I think, you know, there's a lot to be said for a large part of that thrashing meted out to West Ham by Liverpool, in the fact that, you know, I think this is probably, it's early days, but probably, you know, the best squad Liverpool have assembled maybe in my lifetime. I think for most people, they're probably the clear and obvious challenger to Man City this season. So hopefully, you know, it will result in more of a title race. But, you know, we'll see. I think this will be your first true test now on Monday night, you know, whether you know, your championship your aspirations can be satisfied and met with a tricky trip down to Cellar. So, you know, hopefully it'll be a wake up call for you, and you're going to have to realise that, actually, forget about Naby Keita. We need to put Jordan Henderson back in, and maybe he's the guy who can make it tick.
Excellent stuff. Cheers, Donnet. Right, okay. So for the first time, we're going to have a special guest reading my song tonight, because she wants to come on every single week. It's Layla. A few of the listeners will have heard her coming on the podcast before, but tonight she's going to read she's going to introduce the band for us. So everybody that's listening, Layla's now going to introduce you. The band that we're going to
go on
the top table tonight. Right, Layla, you ready?
This song is called Quiet Wolf by Shady Ghost.
Well done.
Yeah, well done. Layla.
Thank you.
Natural.
Such a lonely state. I wanna feel something, at least sometimes. And the sighs bounce inside the sighs. We're dodging cold nights, but I think we'll be alright. I still clench my fist.
The song was called Quiet Wolf by Shady Groves. Thanks very much to Jay Riley, and thanks very much to Donna Hurley, and thanks very much to Layla for introducing the to the band tonight. And Thanks again for your time, Donna. Hope you
no
enjoy
worries,
the game
no
on Monday.
Yeah, you too. And if you don't get to see it, enjoy France. And yeah, here's to a cracking match.
Cheers, Donna. And that's the Cop Table podcast of the Crystal Palace versus Liverpool game. All done. We'll speak to you all very soon. Goodbye.
Bye, everyone. See you next week.
Outside the Shankly gate, I heard a cop I call.